This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody in the U.S. and around the world. Hope you're having a great summer baseball season, and thanks for listening to another fantastic episode. Of course, I believe it's fantastic. Hopefully, you will, too, of Baseball Outside the Box. Now, before we start, to all our coaches at all levels, I just want to give you a quick challenge. I'm going to challenge you today to one thing. During the season, because I know the season's going on, I challenge you to find your mentor, find one of your top coaches that you have a lot of respect for, have them come out to your game and evaluate your teaching skills. We have done this before. I did this with a Hall of Famer, Jim Hall, when he traveled to Japan and Italy and other countries. I would sit in the stands, and I don't know as much as Jim Hall, trust me, Hall of Fame coach with the ABCA, Illinois High School Coaches Association. And I would take notes from a different perspective, sitting in the stands, take notes on the game. Then I go in the dugout, also take some notes on, you know, you want to know, don't you want to know how you interact with your players? What certain things you're saying, your voice level, how are you doing in game situations? Do you talk too much? You're not talking enough. There's so many different things you can be evaluated for. So that's your challenge. And I'd love to hear from you, because if you do it and you tell me, you know, what was it like? It's tough. I know we all have an ego. Some more than others, and it's sometimes it's not easy having somebody tell you, you know, a different perspective of coaching or managing a game. So tell me about it, and if you give me some great results and what maybe some changes you've made, I'll bring you on the show. Also, don't forget, check out my YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and check out Peter Caliendo. It's tip of the day. And now for a really special guest. You talk about, this is the show that challenges the status quo. Well, I've said it before, there's a lot of young people in the game, and I call him young because I'm a lot older, but he's got a tremendous amount of experience that love to challenge the status quo. And we love it because we want people to say, why are we doing it this way? Is there a better way? And he also has his own baseball podcast called the Cornerstone Coaching Academy podcast. I listen to every episode, and it's not where he brings in guests. It's where he does all the teaching, and it's not a long podcast. He goes right to the point, very short, every podcast, and you learn actionable things you can do in your practices with team aspects. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. You got to listen to the podcast. We'll give you all the information. Let me tell you about Kyle Nelson. He's from Illinois, a high school coach in Illinois at Burlington Central High School. He's been there for 14 years. He also teaches strength and conditioning. So great combination there. He started the Cornerstone Coaching Academy, an online training center for youth travel and high school coaches in 2012. He started as a blog, and then it became a podcast in 2014. I consider it one of the best educational podcasts around anywhere. And that's a big compliment, because there's a lot of good ones out there. Through Cornerstone, he's helped thousands of coaches implement modern-day training into team settings, and that's what we're going to talk about. He's also the vice president and clinic director of the Illinois High School Baseball Coaches Association. He's brought in some great clinic speakers at the association, the Illinois High School Coaches Association, one of the best conventions in the USA. And let me tell you, an extremely bright young man. Let me welcome right away Kyle Nelson. Welcome to the show, Kyle. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Pete. Thanks for having me. Really kind words. I appreciate it, especially coming from you. Love your show. And likewise, listen to pretty much every episode I can of yours. So.
Well, I appreciate that. And as I told you many times, even in person, you do a fantastic job. And that's the reason you're on the show. For two reasons. One, you've got actionable stuff that's really good. You do your homework. You present it all, which means you really got to do your homework. And not only that, but you also, what's great about it is you also use all this stuff in your practices with your players, and you make changes according to what, you know, how things have gone in your practice. I've heard you say all this on your show. So I'm excited to have you. Let's get started. The first thing, I want you to give a better analysis of your podcast to our guests, because I've got people all over the world and I want them to listen to the show. I want to understand that it's for all levels, and you know, you can learn every day from this podcast that you have. So tell us a little bit about the podcast, and then we'll get into some questions.
Absolutely. So, you know, I started it in 2014, and at the time it was kind of a unique way to get the message out about some of the stuff I was doing and some of the things I was trying to accomplish with my team. I use it as much for me as a library of the things that I do, of the things I want to do. And then also it's a great way for me to have to stay current and stay modern and have to be up to date with the most recent, you know, with the most recent things out there and available. Because if you, you know, people who've been following the game know that instruction has changed a lot in the last 5 to 10 years. And one of the unique challenges I think that a lot of people have is, you know, there's a lot of people doing incredible stuff in the one-on-one training world, in the small group training world, but bringing all that stuff into a team setting is really, really challenging. A team setting creates, you know, a number of different problems. You know, mostly things like facility issues, coach to player ratio issues, time constraints, things like that. And I wanted to make sure that I could get across to people how you can bring some of this stuff in to your team and really benefit them in the way that a coach could in a one-on-one setting or in a small group setting or in a camp setting or something like that. And so that was really my main thing that I was that I've been trying to get across now. Like you said, Pete, it's about 10 to 20, maybe 30 minutes where I go into one specific topic. The other thing that's challenging for head coaches is, you know, like I'm the hitting coach, I'm the infield coach, I'm the outfield coach, the catching coach. And so head baseball coaches have to kind of be pretty versatile in their instruction and the things that they know how to do. And so I think the podcast kind of encompasses that, that you've got to be flexible, you've got to be versatile, and you also have to be up to date in a lot of the new techniques and methods for teaching the game.
Absolutely. And folks, you can check out Kyle Nelson on Twitter. Check him out at coach_K Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N. Again, you know all the stuff's going to be on the show notes. Also, check out his podcast, cornerstonecoachingacademy.com. You can see his blog, his podcast shows, also his elite membership. Kyle, I have no idea how you do it. You've got a family, you've got high school baseball, you've got summer baseball. You do a podcast, and folks, he does everything in the podcast. So it's not that somebody else is downloading all this stuff and doing things. I don't know how you find the time, but you do a great job.
Well, most of the time when you hear the podcast online, it's been recorded about 5:00, 5:30 in the morning before my family wakes up. So I think you've asked me once, like, why don't I have guests on the show? I'd love to. It's just tough for me with the schedule I have teaching and coaching to, you know, set up a specific time to be able to, you know, have consistent interviews, because I'd love to have, you know, people like you and other great coaches on. I just don't know that a lot of you are willing to wake up when I am recording things.
Well, I'll tell you what, you got a great niche, because I really enjoy the show because of the fact that, you, like I said, you do your homework. It's proven stuff that you've used. You've made changes in your practices, changes on the show. So you actually get into how to actually do it, and there's a lot of learning. I think it's very practical, so I really like it. Now, let me tell you said something about the game has changed. How do you see the game changed, and what's the adjustments you made in some of your coaching changes according to what you just said?
Well, I think one of the things that I've tried to do over the years is, you know, kids really, really enjoy the technology that we've brought into our program in the last couple of years, and learning, you know, we've incorporated blast motion sensors with our hitters. We've incorporated, you know, a lot of different protocols and things with our pitchers. We have a Rapsodo hitting machine that we've been using for the last year or so. And what I've noticed with our players is that that's kind of the world that they live in now. You know, everything is technology based. Everything, they get feedback kind of instantly on a lot of the things they do. And they've really enjoyed, like, when they're hitting with a blast motion sensor, being able to see what was their bat speed, what was their attack angle, what was their time to contact, and what does that tell them about the way that they can improve because I get such limited time with them. You know, in Illinois, we're really, really hamstrung on the amount of time we can spend with our athletes, right? We start practice like right around the 1st of March, and we start games right around the 17th of March. And so for me to go to a player and tell them about, you know, some internal cue about, you know, where their hands are hitting or what their swing looks like, and I talk to them for a couple of minutes, and then I move on to another player. And by the time I get to that other player, what I told them could be totally gone, and by the time, you know, they move on to another station or something like that, and they've either forgotten what I told them or they've just gone back to what's comfortable. Well, when you're able to put some kind of a metric, when you're able to put something that can hold them accountable without you there, I think that that's a really cool thing that our players enjoy. I've been able to utilize specifically this past year, but also over the past several years as we've kind of gone down that path a little bit more.
Yeah, and folks, you heard the word technology, and it sounds like technology can be like an assistant coach. And, you know, some technology is very expensive, and some you can get at a very reasonable cost. So anything you can do to help yourself and to make it interesting for the players, yeah, that's a great benefit. Kyle, now, give us an idea. Let's go through it. Let's take one of the technologies that you use and give us an idea how it's benefited, you know, how you used it and how it's benefited some of your players.
So I think one that's really accessible for a lot of coaches, we do have a Rapsodo hitting unit. That's like $3,000. So, but the thing that's really accessible for people is our blast motion sensors. They're like $150 a piece. We bought three of them. We got one for each of our levels. So we have like a varsity, a JV, and a freshman level. We have one for each of our levels. And I think that's a really, really accessible piece of technology for a lot of people that is pretty easy to use in a practice setting. Now, you do need to have either an iPad or a phone or something like that you can link it to. Probably we'll need to get a stand that you can link it to as well. And then one of the ways that we used it this year was we created leaderboards for our team after a couple of different assessments. So we did three different assessments this year with our team using Blast and Rapsodo. We did one at the beginning of the year. We did one during our conference bye week, about 6 weeks into the year. And then we did one closer to the end of the year. And after each of the assessments, we went through with all of our players and said, okay, here's where your bat speed is right now. Here's where your attack angle average is right now. Here's your time to contact right now. And these are the specific areas that you need to work on in order to improve. And so what I think was cool about it was you could have a player who, you know, has good bat speed, they're quick to the ball, and they're having trouble figuring out, well, why aren't I able to hit right now? And you can say, and I'm thinking of one player in particular on our team, and I said, well, your attack angle is way too steep. You're at like 25 degrees, and you're completely undercutting everything. And he was able to get his attack angle down into that good 5 to 15 degrees for the year, towards the end of the year, and have some more success later on in the year. You know, we had players who, maybe someone who wasn't playing as much for us, and we would say, well, your bat speed is one of the reasons why, and here's the way that we're going to try to improve your bat speed. We're going to give you some weighted bat training throughout the year. We're going to keep you on a little bit more of an aggressive weight training program throughout the year. And I think it gave players something really actionable that they could go back and say, okay, here's exactly what I need to improve on, and here's the exact specific ways that we're going to need to be, that I'm going to be able to improve on it this year. And, you know, some guys that worked really well, some guys, you know, made small improvements, some guys kind of stayed about the same, but I think it was good for them to see, put numbers to, you know, what can I do to get better, so that we're not just simply guessing and saying, well, your bat looks slow, or you look like you're undercutting the ball, or you look like you're, you know, chopping down too much on the ball. And we were able to actually put specific numbers to it and say, well, here's, you know, exactly what's going on with your swing, and hopefully we can make these improvements by the end of the year to give yourself either a chance to be better in game, a chance to see more playing time, or if you're not playing much, a chance to see playing time next year, so you know exactly what it is you need to work on in the offseason.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And, you know, we all know high school baseball is not easy. High school in general teaching is not easy. I have a lot of respect for high school teachers. And, you know, when it comes to the game of baseball, you've got to deal with parents and Yeah, you know, and then you have times where you have players that are not happy for certain reasons. I got to believe some of this technology also helps you with, you know, when you got to make lineups, when you have to, unfortunately, you know, make some cuts or, you know, players aren't playing. Explain how you use the technology in that respect.
Well, it was a little bit of a learning curve for me with this year being the first year of us implementing a lot of it. We did use it a lot in those regards, especially early in the season, right? But, I mean, you know, like I do, that the numbers in a batting practice, and we try to make our batting practice as competitive as possible. But even so, it's still different when you get in a game and you're seeing live pitching. And so there is a little bit of a discrepancy between what a player can do in batting practice and what they can do in game. But it was useful to have some of those numbers when you sit down with a player and you say, well, here's exactly what we need to see you improve on if you want to get more playing time. We did post all of our leaderboards in the locker room so the players could kind of see like where they were in relationship to the rest of the team. The one stat that we kind of, I guess, overvalued just a little bit this year from what we saw in practice to in game was bat speed. And that's not to say that I don't think bat speed's important. Because I do think bat speed is incredibly important for high school hitters. But what we found was that there were, like, some of our more successful hitters were around our team average on bat speed, and only a couple of them were towards the top. But that several of the hitters at the top who, because of their bat speed, we said, okay, this guy's really going to be able to hit for us. There was something else going on when they got in game, whether it was pitch selection or whether it was you know, pitch recognition or timing that they really struggled with that didn't allow them to utilize that bat speed that they had. And so we did overvalue that just a little bit at the beginning of the year, just assuming that because a player had good bat speed, that they would be able to hit really well. And that was something that we kind of learned throughout the season. And then when I went back and looked at, you know, the data that we took from our assessments and how it translated into the game, that was one of the things that I realized was that we had overvalued that just a little bit. It doesn't mean we're going to stop training for bat speed. It doesn't mean that I don't think bat speed's important. It just means that at the initial beginning of the year evaluation, we probably need to pair that a little bit more with what's happening with the batted ball instead of just simply the swing and what it's doing.
Well, what's sweet about it sounds like the technology and the analysis that you do ahead of time, it kind of determines what areas players need to work on. You know, sometimes in the old days, we had to guess at that, you know. Now we have better technology where it gives us an idea, well, this young man, maybe he does need to work on some bat speed. This other young person needs to work on vision. Another young person needs to work on something else because they're not all going to have the same deficiencies, are they?
No, yeah. We found a lot of our players had one or two different deficiencies as we went through. Like you said, maybe it was bat speed. Maybe it was attack angle. Maybe they were really slow to contact, which probably means that they just have a really long swing. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to, the place I'm going to try to take this next year is I'm going to try to bucket our players offensively into their deficiency areas so that they're working with players who have similar deficiencies. And then as we go through practices, as they go through pregame batting practice, as they go through, you know, any hitting that they do, they'll be grouped together so that they're doing similar drills. So they're doing things that are going to benefit them a little bit more. You know, with that being said, you know, coaching high schoolers, you know, they can all still kind of use everything, right? Like they're, you know, they can all use better bat speed. They can all use to be a little quicker. They can all use better pitch recognition. They can all use a better approach at the plate. So there's not anywhere I would say like, well, we don't need to work on this at all with these players, but the focus for each of those groups will be their specific weaknesses. So as they go, you know, through their practice, they'll have drills that are more tailored to them. We were not able to accomplish that this year with just starting to learn a little bit more about all the technology that we're using with our hitters. But next year, that's certainly an area where we're going to take them, is they'll be bucketed into a bat speed group, a pitch recognition group, an approach group, an attack angle group, with what I think is their biggest deficiency that they're going to need to improve on to, again, go to that next level, whatever it is for them, playing time, all conference, playing in college, you know, that kind of thing.
Kyle, when you're working with your teams prior to that, how do you determine, you know, because you've made some changes in your coaching like other coaches have, how do you determine what you're going to change? You know, is there a philosophy or a guideline that you use to say, you know, things like, you know, is this the best way to do it? I mean, do you always look at it that way?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a pretty successful program, you know, for the last 15 years. But I think if you ever truly, like, if you ever become satisfied with what you're doing and you just say, hey, this is what we're going to do, I guarantee you, like, 5 years from now, I'll look back on what I did last year and I'll say, man, there were so many things I wanted to do different or better. I should have done different or better. I mean, I look back at what I was doing 15 years ago and I think, my goodness, my practices were inefficient. You know, the way I taught hitting was pretty antiquated. What I did with my pitchers and my two-way players was, you know, probably a little bit unsafe. And you're always constantly trying to learn in all areas of the game, really. I mean, we've, in the last 5 years, we've probably completely redone our hitting program, certainly our infield, our program for infielders, our program for pitchers. This year we revamped as well, looking a lot more at load management. And again, trying to bucket players into weaknesses where they can help, where they can be helped specifically. We completely revamped our infield program. Our program for catchers has changed over the last 5 to 6 years. And I imagine over the next 5 to 10 years, it'll change again. And I'll be looking for better ways to do things or things that I think make more sense where I'm at with our team. Because really, you know, if you coach a 12U team, you got to make sure that you're coaching them where they're at or right to the edge of their ability. If you coach a high school team, you want to try to coach them to the edge of their ability. And so I think that I'm constantly looking for ways to find the edge of it so you can push them just a little bit farther. It's kind of like a weight room analogy. You know, one day you're bench pressing 135, the next day 140, then one, you know, and you're constantly trying to move up just a little bit beyond. But if you constantly walk into the weight room and bench press 135, then in a year, you're going to be bench pressing 135. So,
you know, folks, you got to go to cornerstonecoachingacademy.com. Again, cornerstonecoachingacademy.com. Check it out. I mean, you're going to see, here's what I love about it. You know, you're going to see topics like hitting protocols that transfer to game performance, variability training drills for pitchers, elite members area table of contents, 47 new chaos hitting drills, very specific things, new things. Now, here's an interesting question that I want to ask you. What resources do you use to help you make your changes? You know, some you know, things that you've learned just by trial and error, and I sure would love to hear a couple of those, but, you know, what resources do you use to help you make these changes?
Well, I use just about anything I can get my hands on. You know, one of the things that actually kind of set me down this path, believe it or not, was listening to one of your talks at a clinic, and it was an outside the box talk, and you were talking about, you know, how do we do things pregame, and we've always hit our first ball to the left fielder, and is that what we should do? And that just got me thinking, like, hey. How can I constantly try to make things different and make things better? I really think that that there's always a way to try to improve. And so, you know, for me personally, going to clinics has been huge for me, like in-person clinics. Mm-hmm. You know, I run the Illinois clinic, and so for me, it's like I kind of go around and say, all right, who do I want to learn from this year? And then I put them into our clinic or try to get them for our clinic. So going to in-person clinics have been huge, but the internet is an incredible incredible source. I mean, there's so much good information out there right now. You know, the things they're doing over at Driveline Baseball, to me, is really awesome. They have, you know, the staff, the resources, and everything like that to be able to test and retest things and see where they're at. Some of the people you've had on your show before with, you know, the Texas Baseball Ranch and some of the things they do, the Florida Baseball Ranch. You know, I follow them pretty closely with a lot of what they're doing as well. But to me, the biggest thing is kind of sifting through all that information and saying, okay, what makes sense and what doesn't make sense? Because there's a lot of it out there that, quite honestly, just doesn't make sense. And that's okay. It might work for them in their specific instance, but it's not going to work for me, and it may not work for you, but it may work for another coach. And so that's what I've tried to do, is just look at things from kind of a blank perspective. You know, if I'd never taught hitting before, how would I teach it? Mm-hmm. And if I'd never taught pitching before, how would I teach pitching? What are the things that are important for my infielders to be able to do? And then how can I work those into my practices on a daily basis so that they get better at those things? And then I go out and seek people who are able to do those things well, and I just try to learn from them and pull a few things here and there from them that I think will fit and make sense with us.
You know, I love hearing that, because I'll tell you this. I know there's two things I think we all struggle with as coaches. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. One is getting all this information, and you mentioned some great organizations, and you know when they're using technology and science, you know, that at least they've done their homework. They're not just saying, this is what I think. Mm-hmm. So I get that part. But sometimes there's stuff out there that we have to filter through. That's a difficult thing for some coaches to do. You know, it's like you said, do I use this? And the other aspect is the time, you know, that I have in my practices. I mean, there's only so much time in a practice I can have. If you use all this stuff that these guys were using, you need 150 practices before the season started.
Right. Yeah. And also a lot of it, though, is just learning how to be creative with your practices so that there's no wasted time within them. Just to give you a quick example, you know, one of the first things you want to do in any practice is to get your heart rate up, right? You want to get the player's heart rate up. You're going to get them moving a little bit. And mm-hmm. and for years, I used to have them run two pulls, right? Pull to pull and back. And then I took a master's program in coaching education at Ohio University a handful of years ago. And one of the instructors there was talking about how that's wasted time in your practice, just that movement back and forth. And he said, well, how can you use that warm-up time to get better at some aspect of the game while still getting their heart rate up? And so what we do now is we'll have some, you know, little small drill for our players to be doing during that initial time. One of the common ones that we use is we'll use a little rundown drill with no base runners. And that'll be the first thing we do in our practice. It's about 50 to 60% speed. They're getting their heart rate up, but they're also working on the technique of rundowns at that time. Our outfielders are doing like a little light quarterback drill. So while they're getting their heart rate up, they're also working on catching the ball on the run. Our pitchers are working on covering first base. So while they're or fielding bunts without a throw. So while they're getting their heart rate up, they're also working on some aspect of the game. And so if you show up to our practice, that's the first thing that you'll see. Is we don't sit in a circle and stretch. We don't do two pulls. The first thing you'll see us do is that little tiny drill. And I've got a handful of them, but we'll do that little tiny drill to get their heart rate up. And then they're also working on some aspect of the game. We also have changed our catch play just a little bit. Before we go into individual catch, we actually do a group catch, whether it's a four corners or whether it's you know, some kind of a triangle drill or something like that. So we'll do a small group catch with our players. And I think that helps them focus a little bit more on their catch play, because when you're in one-on-one catch and you throw the ball away, you go get the ball and you come back, everything keeps going. When you're in group catch and you throw the ball away, the whole group has to stop while we get the ball and bring it back. And I think that has really helped us focus our catch play and make catch play more like a drill instead of making it just something we do to get loose for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I'll tell you, these things that you're talking about, because like you said, you're working on skills and warm-up at the same time, saves you a lot of time. Some of these you've picked up from individuals that you maybe, you know, on the internet or you learn from, you know, like you said earlier. Are there also things that while you're running the practice or even in the off season, things that you come up with that nobody's ever told you that you thought this could be a good idea? Are there any examples of that? Would love to hear that because I love coaches that are creative.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I guess it depends because like what a lot of times what I'll do is take something from someone and then tweak it or change it and put it into our program or our practice kind of where it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, an example of that is a lot of people are using weighted bats now, overweight and underweight bats. And, you know, for me, initially when that was out there, it was strictly as a bat speed tool, right? Like, hey, swing overweight bats, swing underweight bats to help improve your bat speed. And what I started to do with that, and I'm not saying that I was the first person to do this, but I, you know, looked at it and said, well, here's another way I think we could use this, was to help players increase their ability to time the baseball, especially guys who struggled on hitting the ball inside or hitting the ball away. So if they struggle on hitting the ball inside, we give them a slightly overweight bat. And now that kind of emphasizes to them that how much quicker they need to be to try to get that pitch inside. Or with the pitch away, we give them an underweight bat. And they have to try to emphasize waiting and letting the ball travel deeper a little bit more. So it's things like that where you take an idea and then kind of tweak it to exactly what your team needs or, you know, an area that you can show them that your players can use to make it, to make them better. I don't necessarily know if there's anything, you know, that I'm sure there are a handful of things, but I think that's the way I take most of it is I grab something from someone and then I say, all right, this specifically doesn't work for us, or how can I change this to make it work for us? And then do something like that with it. Say, hey, weighted bat training is not just for bat speed. We can use it to help improve timing. We can use it to help players hit the ball the other way. We can use it to help players pull the baseball a little more effectively.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're trying to identify things that are actually going to happen in a ball game.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest complaints about the way I used to teach and used to coach was I looked at, like I could get players really good at hitting in practice, but that didn't always translate into a game, right?
Yeah.
Or I'd get players really good at fielding a ground ball off a when they knew like a backhand when they knew it was coming. But in baseball, almost with the exception of the pitcher, almost everything we do is a reaction. To give you an example of this, next time you're working with a catcher, and you're working blocks with them. You know, throw about four or five blocks in a row and then make sure they're geared up and then throw one down the middle and watch them drop to their knees and have them hit it in the chest. And what you realize is that you're working the mechanics of blocking, but that so much of blocking is recognizing the pitch that needs to be blocked and being able to beat it there. And you're not really working that mechanism at all when you just simply block 10 pitches in a row. So, you know, I would say this probably happened about 7 or 8 years ago when I looked at our practices and I said, we need to get more decision-making into practice before performing a skill. We need to have them making a decision when they're hitting. They're not just going to come in the cage and swing at the first 8 pitches that we throw. You know, we throw balls in batting practice on purpose. We throw bad pitches on purpose. Because if they don't work on pitch selection in practice, when are they ever going to get to work on pitch selection? Well, that'll be in the game. And if they're not very good at it, then, you know, coaches are going to get upset at them for swinging at balls over their, you know, above their hands or swinging at balls outside. But if you allow them to get away with that in practice, then you've really fed the problem. With infielders, you know, a lot of times people will work just here's ground balls at you, here's ground balls your forehand, here's ground balls your backhand, and they don't have to read the ball and make a decision on what kind of a movement they need to make. And so that to me was, you know, like 7 or 8 years ago, I really made that change because I felt like I wasn't preparing guys for what they were actually going to see. I was preparing them to be really good in practice, but not to be really good in the game.
You know what makes 100% sense. And I got to believe that hopefully coaches in the U.S. and around the world at all levels, especially at the younger levels, because I've said it on the show, Kyle, many times, you know, we've got to make sure that our coaches working with our younger level. Some of them happen to be volunteers. Some are not because now they're travel teams that are running young teams. So they're professionals in the game. A lot of them guys that, you know, study the game. I'm hoping more and more that they take this philosophy because it's the only way I can see the game getting better. And kids have a lot more fun because they get to make decisions when it comes to ball games. But practice is a lot more fun. They get better. Reaching the young levels. And folks, that's why I want you to go to cornerstonecoachingacademy.com because I'm telling you, go to the website, you're going to see a lot of great information. This is not basic information, and this is not stuff we've taught 5, 10 years ago. This is up-to-date things. Kyle's really thought a lot of this stuff through. I picked a bunch of stuff up. And here's the other thing is when you go to the website, join the Cornerstone Elite program because there's videos, there's program. And Kyle, I want you to tell our audience just a little bit about the Elite membership that you have because, you know, there's so much stuff on here. It's incredible.
So our Elite membership, it has all of our hitting drills. So I think we've got over 80 hitting drills in there, but 50 of them specifically we call chaos hitting drills. And those are the drills where we're trying to promote a chaotic environment for our hitters. And the reason that we want to do that is because hitting in a game is very chaotic. You know, if you say hitting in a game is calculus and then your batting practice looks like 2+2, you're never going to learn calculus by continually doing 2+2 over and over again. We also have all of the probably over 40 practice plans in there for a variety of different levels. So we have practice plans for high school levels that have all the resources that you're going to need. So you go on to the practice plan, you're unsure of what a drill is or what something is, you click on it, it takes you directly to what that drill is or what that topic is. I actually created 10 of those practice plans specifically for us that we still use today because what I realized was I was missing several areas. Like, we would get burned by a first and third defense or a bunt defense or something like that. And I'm like, man, we haven't practiced that in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, and that's my fault. Yeah. And so what these practice plans do is they kind of loop you through all the skills, all the tactics, everything that you're going to need so that you don't go 2 or 3 weeks without missing, you know, something. You just pull the next plan in the series, put it into play, and you've made sure that over every couple weeks you've hit just about every topic that you're going to need to hit. It's got all of our infield drills in there. One of the neat things I think that we did this year was our pitching plan that we put together for workload management, and it gives a really in-depth description of what that is. I'll give you kind of the abridged version here, but we divided our pitchers this year into workload days. So their workload was either red, yellow, or green, depending on how much they'd thrown in the previous days. Also depending on how they've been feeling and then what they were anticipated to have to do the day before. So a green day was someone who was ready to throw with full intent, whether that be a bullpen session, game day, an aggressive long toss, for our guys who were trying to gain some velocity, that might be a weighted ball day for them. A yellow day was a day when they were able to throw some full intent throws, but, you know, not that much. That might be a lighter long toss day, some command work, some pitch spinning or just working on spinning curveballs, changeups. They might do a short box that day. And then a red day is like a full recovery day. So they either pitched the day before or they were pitching the next day. And so that we're just doing our warm-up protocols, some really light catch probably doing some of our plyo care drills, but then we're also preparing them for the next day or full-on recovery from what they've done the day before. And in there, I give you a spreadsheet, show you how we our pitching coach and me came up with it this year, and then he actually implemented it with keeping guys on the days they were supposed to be on. And I think that really, really promoted the idea of arm health with our players, helped our two-way players out tremendously because we were able to monitor their throwing load a lot better by using this and giving them an understanding of it too. So that was one of the big things in our pitching section in there that I show you how to do. We also have documents on building your program because there's a lot of things that go into baseball if you're a head coach other than just what you see and do on the field. There's, you know, creating expectations for your players, creating expectations for your coaches, your program, things like that. And so we cover a lot of that stuff in there as well.
You know, in listening to you talk about the pitching part, you know, what I love about it is, you know, earlier I said, you know, and you mentioned it, you know, you need to be creative. That program you just talked about, you didn't get from somebody else. You might have got parts of things from others, but you created that program according to what you feel is going to help your players the best. And it sounds like there's some results from it.
Yeah, that is, you know, that's something, yeah, that's an example of where we took bits and pieces, like a lot of the protocols and things like that. You know, we were using some of the driveline protocols in there, you know, with their plyo care balls and stuff like that. But yeah, putting it into those types of days, and monitoring workload, I think is really, really beneficial for our pitchers. They, you know, we had one arm injury this year, and it was someone who had the doctor said it was more of a genetic thing with their growth plate than anything else. It's a player that had grown about 5 or 6 inches in the last year. Other than that, you know, our pitchers really, I think, felt very good this year. And not only that, but they felt like, when they were ready to throw, they could let it loose and really throw. When they weren't ready to throw, that they could let us know. Like, there was nothing wrong with a player coming to us who was supposed to be on a yellow day, you know, maybe doing some long toss, a little more aggressive catch, and saying, hey, I don't feel real good today. Can I back off? And we'll say, yeah, we'll put you on a red day. And so what we have for our pitchers is we have different sheets with all the different things they can do on a given day. So our pitching coach, when he shows up, he gives the players their day. Hey, are we good with this? Yeah. Okay. Does anyone need to switch? No. Okay. Here's the red sheet. Here's the yellow sheets. Here's the green sheets. And then they kind of get to pick and choose. There's some things on there that they have to do on each day, but then they kind of get to pick and choose what they want to do off of each one. So if there's a player, like our number one pitcher this year, for instance, he really struggled a lot with his breaking pitch as a junior. And so when he was on a yellow or red day, he would spend a lot of time spinning his breaking ball and trying to work on that. So that was a focus for him. You know, we had some other pitchers who needed to work on changeups. So when they were on those days, they were doing they're working their changeups, or if pitchers who needed to work on command, they would be able to focus on that. And so that was another way we kind of individualized for players when they showed up each day, was they kind of got to choose what they felt they wanted to work on. And obviously we guided them like, hey, you need to work on your breaking ball. But they got to kind of pick and choose what they were working on once they got through their warm up. And then the couple drills things we told them they had to do, then they got to choose, like, hey, what do I want to do? What do I want to work on? And we gave our pitchers the first 45 minutes of practice to work on those things. So every day, pitchers would just go with, even if they were two-way, they would go with our pitching coach. While I was working with our other players, they would go with the pitching coach, and they had the first 45 minutes of practice to get their pitching work done.
Well, I love that they're part of their development. You know, they get an input on their development. They get a chance to do some of the things that they need to work on. And again, I hope that coaches that are working at younger levels understand this, because I think the more responsibility we give players at a younger age, the more fun they have. But you talked about chaotic training environment. Give me another example for our audience, an example of where else do you implement the chaotic environment? You mentioned in the hitting aspect, I think, but where else in your practices do you include this in?
Well, you can, I think pitchers can actually benefit from it as well. It seems like pitchers should only need to throw a 5-ounce ball from 60 feet, right? 60 feet, 6 inches. But what I think you find with pitchers is that they become so ingrained on just them having to do that one thing that I think it actually costs them a little bit in command because they don't have to adapt to stimulus a lot of times. And then whenever something goes just a little bit wrong for them, you know, I mean, I was a pitcher in high school and college, and there's some days when you come out and you feel great, your arm's loose and everything works, your body seems to be sequenced right. And there's some days you come out and you don't have legs underneath you, or your breaking ball feels weird, and you can't quite, you know, you don't know if you need to be loose with it or have a little firmer grip. And those days that are just a little bit different, trying to minimize or I guess maximize what you can do on those days, I think that actually putting your pitchers in a chaotic environment can help them with that. You know, we do things like throwing short bullpens with slightly overweight and underweight balls. And some people that may not make sense because, well, they're throwing a 5-ounce ball. And my response to that is, you ever feel a baseball at the end of a spring game in Illinois?
Yeah.
You know, that ball is probably not 5 ounces anymore.
Absolutely. Hey, I asked the Dominican players after they've used it in the rain for 5 days or, you know, and it's waterlogged.
Right.
I mean, they got no choice. That's awesome. Keep going.
Yeah. Or like, you know, every mound you're on is different. You know, we throw a lot of stuff in Illinois in the wintertime off of these really nice indoor turf mounds, right? And then you get out to the game and there's a crater 4 inches deep in front of a mound that's probably not 10 inches high, and it may not be 60 feet, 6 inches from, you know, from home plate. And so they constantly have to adapt to different things. Their hand might be cold, it might be really humid, and their hand might be wet. And so we do put our pitchers in some of those scenarios where they have to try to command the ball, you know, from shorter distance, from longer distance, with a little bit oversized ball, with a little bit undersized ball, with a heavy ball, with a light ball. We'll even do some where they have to do it on the run. Like, you know, they're just running and trying to find that release point and trying to adapt to something. So something that to us that seems like it should be really, really simple. You throw from 60 feet, 6 inches all the time with a 5-ounce ball. In practice, really isn't that way because of how you feel, or you know what's going on with your hands, or what's going on with the ball, or you know what's going on with the mound you're working on. And so, I just think giving players tools like that to be able to adapt in game, whether it's as a pitcher or as an infielder. You know, I got so caught up when I was playing and in my early coaching years on trying to teach the mechanics of infield play that I totally forgot about just letting them be an athlete, and that the number one goal is to throw the runner out at first base or to start the front end of a double play. And I got so into the mechanics of fielding that I really hamstrung my infielders a lot early on in my career. And now what I'm more concerned about is letting them be athletic and letting them be free movers and letting them find a solution to a problem of what seems like a simple problem, a ground ball, but there's probably not any two ground balls that a infielder is going to see in a season that are exactly the same, you know, same exit velocity, same spin, same launch angle, same hop, same direction. Everything they're going to see throughout the year is different. And so they have a variety of different solutions in their toolbox to solve all these different problems that they're going to see. And I just got so caught up in making them field the ball with two hands in front of them as much as they could, with exactly perfect footwork. And it really hamstrung a lot of my athletic infielders that I had early in my career. And now I think that my infielders have a lot more solutions available to them because I don't really care if they take a ground ball right at them, take two steps in to get a better hop, but they field it with one hand. you know, and kind of do like a little run through. Like that doesn't mm-hmm. bother me anymore because given them, I've let them work on those things in practice. You know, so those are just kind of some of the examples of ways that we go about trying to make it as chaotic as we can in our individual drills or in our team drills.
And Kyle, you've worked with all ages, so I know you work with younger players too before high school. Mm-hmm. The things that you implement with young players, whether they be 12 or 13 or 11, and when you implement this stuff, how do you determine, I mean, is there a level where you determine, you know, I can use this, but I can't use this?
So I go back to the weightlifting analogy, right? Like you want to be right at the edge of a player or a team's ability level. So if mm-hmm. you're seeing tons and tons of failure, that's probably something that's above and beyond where they should be right now. You know, I'll give you an example of one of our hitting drills that we use. A lot of people use the three-plate hitting drills for timing. We change up just a little bit with our high school guys, and we will give them like a heavy bat at the front plate and a light bat at the back plate, and we'll mix in breaking balls as well. Some of our guys, that's okay. They're able to, you know, make contact. They're able to compete in that drill. Some of our guys, that's above them. If I implemented that with a younger group, I would probably say that, you know, if I work with a 12U and a 13U group in our area, that would be so far above and beyond them. I don't think it'd be doing them any good. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't see any success. They would be really frustrated. Mm-hmm. So maybe for that group, just simply the three plate drill or even a two plate drill where we're just going, you know, velocity from one and then move up. And so it's a little quicker and then move back. So it's a little slower. So what you're trying to do is if you try to implement something and it is either too easy for them, they have a huge amount of success at it, that's probably not something that should be a constant fixture in your practices. You want to try to push them just a little bit beyond their comfort zone when they're in practice so that they're getting better. And that can actually vary within your team. You know, so there's some players on a team that are ready for some things and some players that aren't. And we really found that out this year, tried to make some changes with that this year. We bought a hack attack machine so that we could look at, see velocity a little bit more often. And one of the things I realized was that our top, you know, 9-12 players were able to compete against 90 miles an hour through the hack attack machine. Our bottom 9-12 players, it just blew them away. So when mm-hmm. they came in, we just turned it down. They didn't know mm-hmm. that. We turned it down to about 84, and they were able to have some success there. So sure. just trying to push them right to the edge. So if you see something that they have way too much success at or something that they have almost no success at, then those are probably things that are outside of where they should be. So that's going to kind of vary by team and level, but – I do think that's kind of a good guideline for coaches as they're deciding what should be involved in their practice and what shouldn't be.
Great way to answer that. Love it. Hey, you know, what does Kyle Nelson struggle with when it comes to running a practice? What's the hardest thing for you to do and that you're trying to get better at?
So I've had such an obsession over the last few years with being as efficient as possible that it's tough for me to realize that sometimes there are things that you have to do where you slow things down and you try to work a little bit slower with your team or a little bit slower with your players. An example of this, I had an assistant coach a few years ago who came to me and I love assistant coaches who challenge, right? I love assistant coaches who say, hey, I think we need to do this. I think we need to do that. And he came to me and he said, look, he said, we have some guys on our team who have not seen live pitching in a couple weeks because they are, they're not playing very much. He says, but if we get an injury or two, we're going to need some of these players, and they haven't seen live at-bats in a couple weeks. Yeah, they've been taking batting practice, but that's different than taking live at-bats. He goes, we also have some pitchers who haven't thrown in games in a while. He says, can we take in the next couple of practices and can we put them, you know, against each other live? And I said, well, you know, if I do that, we're going to take up the infield and it's going to drive me crazy, right? Because there's going to be the old practice where you see a whole bunch of guys standing around and just a couple of guys working at a time. And then he said, yeah, I understand that. He said, but our guys need this. We have guys on our team right now that need to see at-bats, that need to throw innings. He says, so why don't you send me, like, these two guys plus six more. We'll throw an infield out, a couple outfielders, and we'll let guys get live defensive reps. He said, then you can take the rest of the team off to the side and do whatever you want. We'll just rotate these six guys through with me. And he's like, and you don't even have to look at it. He's like, you just pretend like we're not even doing it down there. And at first it bothered me because you've got those six guys out there who are getting a couple of, you know, balls in play every now and then. And so they maybe weren't being used that efficiently in practice. But what happened was I realized how beneficial it was for our pitchers and hitters to see those live at-bats, that I needed to slow down in that instance and not have, you know, this fast-paced, extremely, I don't want to say innovative, but I don't need to have this super fast-paced practice going on at all times, that we can back off of things a little bit and we can analyze things a little bit more, or we can give players what they need a little bit more. And so with that, then led us this year, when we were inside early in the year, and we were inside a ton this year, was I would take five or six players in that first, you know, pitcher time of practice, and they would go over with the pitchers, and they would be live hitters with our pitchers. And so early in practice during bullpens, I've got four to five position players over there getting live at-bats. The rest of our position players are over with me, either in the cage or doing defensive work or base running or something like that. And it was a slower pace for those guys who were getting live at-bats. And for our couple pitchers who were waiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it benefited us because when we hit the ground running day one, we had guys who had 25, 30 at-bats inside under their belts. And it was a little bit slower, and it bothered me at first. But, you know, I think that really opened my eyes to, yeah, I want to have these incredibly fast-paced practices, but what does the team really need? The team needed to see live at-bats. Yeah, we needed to sacrifice a few things in order to make that happen.
Very, very, very interesting. What's a couple things that Kyle Nelson has learned in the last couple months, you know, within all your podcasts or anything, any research you've done? What's a couple things that you can kind of tell our listeners around the world and in the U.S., you know, things that you learned?
I read an amazing book when I was on vacation just a couple weeks ago. It's called Range, and it is by, I want to say that his name is David Epstein. I forget. I'll look it up here. It was talking about, it's Range by David Epstein. And in the book, it's the study of generalists versus specialists. And this idea we have now, especially in the United States, of of specializing, and we have some kids who are specializing in sports so early,
and
we have some kids who are entering as a freshman, and they're like, I want to be a pitcher only, and I'm like, that's great, but you know, don't you want to play the game still? Don't you want to, you know, be involved in other parts of practice still? And this book really changed the way I looked at, maybe not, it may have minimal influence in the way that I coach on a daily basis, but it really changed the way I looked at problem solving on the whole, and why it's good to learn a variety of different things, why it's good to, be able to look at things from a variety of different perspectives. So one of the things that I'm going to do a little bit more this year, and I have done this in the past and kind of got away from it, but I'm going to go to different practices. I'm going to go watch a volleyball practice. I'm going to go watch a football practice. I'm going to go watch a soccer practice and try to figure out what are they doing that I like. It's something I can learn from and incorporate into what we're doing. Because, I mean, the coaching is coaching, right? Whether you're the sport is just a tool you're using to do it. And that book really changed a lot of the way, not even saying like, oh, players should play multiple sports for as long as they can. I do think that they should play multiple sports. Mm-hmm. But the idea of like hyper-specialization so early and how that can impact a player's ability to solve problems or, you know, a coach's ability to solve problems. I think that it was really just beneficial for me to read a book like that. So that was one book that I read that I just absolutely loved.
And also, you know, and when you brought up the point of, you know, watching other sports, I think that's an interesting area. I think we need to do that more often. And I'll tell you why, because I have a friend of mine who I grew up with since I was 9 years old. He's now one of the coaches in the NHL, never played in the NHL before. Kenny McCudden, and you know, he used to train the Blackhawks during the strike, and I used to go watch him work with the Blackhawks because they couldn't work with their coaches. He had the whole team, and it was interesting to watch how he set up the stations, how the fun things that he set up for these major league players, because that's what they are. Mm-hmm. How he organized things, you know, all the things he did in practice, and I'm with you. I think you could learn from other sports. I think we need to learn from other sports. What's something that Kyle Nelson has done in his practices that you just, you know, you said, you know, that's really translated well into game situations? I know there's a lot of things that you've worked on, but what's something really specific that you said, wow, I can see the results instantly in the games?
You know, that's kind of tough because you know, I look at player development more like a long-term type thing, right? But we did have an example this year that comes to mind. We struggled a lot at the beginning of the season for whatever reason with our timing at the plate, just struggled. And I would have thought it would have been better with seeing so many live at-bats early, but when we got into live game, it was like we were late on fastballs and early on breaking balls, which if you're doing that, you can't mm-hmm. hit. Right, no matter what your swing looks like, no matter what your bat speed is, if you're late on fastballs, early on breaking balls, you can't hit. So once we realized this a handful of games into the season, that was when we really made timing an issue every single day in practice, regardless of where you stood with bat speed, regardless of where you stood with you know, your attack angle, things like that. We said, look, if you can be on time with that pitcher's best fastball, then you're going to be able to hit something, right? He might beat you with his breaking ball late in the count, but if we can lay off the curveball early and be on time with his fastball early in the count, then we are going to be at least a little bit more successful. And once we started to implement, you know, some of our three plate drills a little bit more, and once we really made that point of emphasis, talked about it a lot, you know, in the third base coach's box, I'm not one who's going to sit down there and give them mechanical cues, right? I don't want them thinking about mechanics when they're hitting in mm-hmm. game. But I will say something like, hey, be on time, or be on time with his best fastball. And once I really started to make that point of emphasis, you know, I don't know that we improved on hitting breaking balls. I think we improved on laying off breaking balls early. But once we just found that weakness and made that change and made that a point of emphasis, I think that really helped us improve. And I mean, some of it could have been the drill work, but also some of it could have just been in their head thinking, here's what it means to be on time. So we talked about, what does it mean to be on time with their best fastball? Where am I hitting that ball in relationship to the plate, in relationship to my body? And, you know, then just letting them kind of figure out how to get there. You know, a lot of guys were late with their load, and so they were trying to rush with their hands to catch up to a fastball. So if they did make contact, they weren't doing much damage because they were really handsy. So we just got guys moving a little earlier. We got guys into a little bit better rhythm so that they knew when they had to have their front foot down, when they had to be ready to go in order to be able to be on time. Not early, not late, but on time. And once we started to make that a point of emphasis, we saw that improve pretty dramatically over the year. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily like one drill that was a magic drill, but it was kind of like, okay, here's our weakness. Here's what we need to improve on. Let's just make this a point of emphasis for a handful of weeks and see where it goes. And it did get quite a bit better throughout the year.
Kyle Nelson, I knew this was going to be a fantastic show. Well, it's gone beyond fantastic. We're getting down to the end. This has been great, man. This is I'm gonna have to go back as normal and listen to the show again to also pick up some things. We got a couple things. One, I want to ask you one question. Then, normally, what we do at the end is I kind of open it up to you. You know, there's many things that we could have discussed. Maybe there was one specific thing that you wanted to tell our audience or talk about to, you know, our parents, players, and coaches here in the U.S. and around the world. So I'm going to leave that open to you at the end. But one more thing I just wanted to mention, because I've listened to your shows, and one of the things you talked about, you know, even in your warm-ups, and I know you've done this in other areas, and you can talk about any area you like, but even in your warm-ups, you at one time you included, you know, heavy balls, you included weighted balls, elastical cords, all kinds of things in your warm-ups, and then you made a change because of time and some other issues. Can explain that, because here's an instance where you've made the change, and I want coaches to understand that, you know, you don't necessarily have to stay with what you're doing all the time.
Yeah, so we had a warm-up before where we were it was med balls, our band work, yoga, agility training, and dynamic warm-up. And we would divide our team up and have them go around those five circuits. And what we ended up doing was when we split our pitchers off, that was kind of what necessitated this change, right? So our pitchers go right with our pitching coach, which left me with about half the team. And so what I decided to do during this time instead was we still do our band work right after we get our heart rate up. So we get our heart rate up, doing one of those little mini side drills. Then we go to our band work. And then from there, we go right into our group catch. So, that's like a square drill, or Jack Leggett at our Illinois conference last year presented some of his triangle drills, which I really love. And guys mm-hmm. are just throwing in this group catch with, you know, 40, 50, 60% of effort. But again, it's something I think that focuses them a little bit more. And what I liked about this change was that they now are in a group and they have to be focused on something. Whereas before, I felt like when they went right into individual catch, it was a little bit more unstructured. It was a little bit more where they, if they made a mistake, it wasn't as big of a deal. But this was able to get them focused, and more so than physically in the right place, mentally in the right place, which is such a huge part of practice, is keeping players engaged and getting them ready to go. The one thing I don't like about our current setup, and this is something I'm going to look at for next year and how can I implement this more, with our pitchers and a lot of our two-way players being over with the pitching staff early in the practice, was we used to go to base running immediately after we did our warm-up, before we did any catch play. And I thought that really focused your base running. And now we don't get to our base running until the pitchers come back with the position players in practice, because we've got a lot of two-way guys, and a lot of them are over with the pitchers each day. And so I don't like where that puts base running in practice. And I found myself this year a couple times even like, well, we're behind because pitchers took an hour and they're only supposed to take 45 minutes. So we're just going to skip that base running segment. And I didn't like that. So I'm going to try to figure out a way to make, you know, change that for next year so I can get that base running back kind of where I like it. But, you know, I haven't been able to actually look at that much lately. But, yeah, that was one of the changes that I made. And I do like the early part with the individual or the group catch first. The other thing is, you know, on the road, you can sometimes walk off a bus and you've got, you know, you walk off a bus and it's 4:10 and your start time is 4:30. And, you know, that's not ideal, especially when it's like 45 degrees. But, you know, I think that this got people's blood flowing. It got them active in a game. And it was able to be done every day, regardless of our time constraints. So if we had 15 minutes, we could get this done. Whereas with the other stuff, we really struggled on the road, and it was like we kind of had two different warm-ups. We kind of had like one when we had time and one when we didn't. And now we can get this done in about 15 minutes or so, just about every day.
And I got to ask you, you mentioned batting practice and you mentioned some great stuff. Is there a couple things you changed in your batting practice routine, daily routine with your team in practice?
Going to more of the external cues, I think has been our biggest change over the last couple of years, where we give players goals and things that they need to find solutions for. That certainly is one. We've also done a lot improved our station work, I think, a little bit. But the biggest thing that we're going to do, as I mentioned before, for next year is bucketing guys. I think that putting them into their weaknesses is going to be huge for our program, because it'll give them the focus every day of working on their weaknesses and the things that they need to get better at. So that's something that I'm really excited about. For next year, to be able to bucket guys and get them in the places they need to be during batting practice.
Mm-hmm. And what's the difference between your off season, where you guys take high school, you have I think 20 some practices mm-hmm. that you're allowed prior to the season, and your during season batting practice? Is there a difference there?
It does depend on the player. So, if we have a developmental player, someone who's not playing very much, they're going to be heavy bat speed if they need it. They're going to be heavy weightlifting still. In season is when we're going to be a little bit more on the competitive side with our batting practices, because their main thing they need to do, it's difficult to change hitting mechanics during a season. So what they're going to be focused on is pitch selection, pitch recognition, plate approach, timing, things like that. Whereas a more developmental player, they might be focused on something mechanical that they need to improve on, or improving bat speed. So it does depend a little bit on the player, but typically in season, like once our games start, we don't talk about mechanics hardly at all in season. We may have a couple of guys that we, who are playing, who we see something we think is easily fixable that we might talk about. But for the most part, in season, it's just, how do you compete against a pitcher's best fastball, lay off breaking balls early in the count, and then compete with two strikes?
Kyle, I know it's not easy during, with high school players, because you got to watch their arms. Or with any player, you got to watch their arms, and you only have so much time. But prior to the season, in your workouts, and even during the season, do you use pitchers to throw batting practice? Or is it just machines, coaches? What's that kind of system that you use?
We're pretty fortunate. I can still throw BP and still mix pitches. So I can mm-hmm. get in there and do it. We have my pitching coach pitched up to Double-A with the Houston Astros. And so he can still do that. He's 30 years old now. He can still do that. The thing with him is he was kind of like a sidearm lefty. So we kind of give two totally different looks, which I think is good. Players get used to hitting two angles. But sometimes you got to watch him, because his breaking ball is so nasty that it kind of goes to that point of like demoralizing your hitters a little bit. So I've got to make sure he backs off of that a little bit. We do have live at-bats that we do. Another new thing we implemented this year at home games, this kind of came from my old assistant, was – players who hadn't been getting a lot of at-bats in games, and pitchers who hadn't been throwing a lot of innings, we'd throw turf mats out on our mound at home plate, and we'd get guys 2 to 3 at-bats and get guys bullpens in a live setting pre-game. Before the other team shows up, we hurry up out there. We've got guys going live on the field. Guys who are going to play that day are down in the cage doing their cage work. And so we do get live. One of the things that we did at our JV level this year, which I really liked, was taking some of those pitchers who aren't seeing as much time, moving them up a little bit, so maybe moving them up to 50 feet or 45 feet, letting them throw from behind an L screen and mix up you know, their stuff against the hitter. The thing about that that makes me a little nervous is you move them up, you got to make sure they really are using that L screen well. But once we teach them how to do that and show them how to do that, I feel pretty comfortable with that. And that's something our JV team did this year because they only have one coach. And so he would use some of his other pitchers to throw batting practice in that way. And I thought that was a really creative thing that they did that we might implement this year when pitchers are on their short box day, that they can actually maybe throw that live to hitters so that hitters can still see something that's mildly competitive. We are fortunate, like I said, that I can throw, my assistant can throw. We also do have a hack attack machine that we use every now and then. We use that more for velocity training. So because like moving up and throwing hard is good for timing, but it's still different than seeing 92 from 60 feet. And so we invested in one of those hack attack machines so that we could actually see velocity. And I think that helped us quite a bit, especially when we were working on our timing this year, was, hey, here, get on time with 86. Get on time with 86, get on time with 82, get on time with 88. And I think that that machine was a big investment for us this year as well.
Well, so much for one more question, because now I got to ask you, you know, I think I went two more questions after I told you one, but I got to ask a hack attack, because I'm sure there's people thinking out there, what's a hack attack machine? What does it actually do?
Well, it's a three-wheel machine that can throw really, really hard. It throws way harder than we need it to. Actually, I came down to practice one day, and our JV coach was with our varsity team, and he had turned it up a little bit, and we put a radar gun behind it. It was throwing like 99 to our guys, and I was like, "Yeah, we don't need that. Let's crank it down a little bit." But it's a three-wheel machine. One of the nice things about it is it can throw all kinds of pitches. So it can throw a fastball, it can throw a two-seam fastball that runs, you know, arm side, it can throw a cut fastball, it can throw a curveball, it can throw a slider. It's a little bit difficult to manipulate the dials to get it to do exactly what you want it to do. One of the things we found was that when we put it to the settings that they had, it was spinning just way too much. Like we were throwing like 84 mile an hour fastballs with like 3,400 RPM spin. And so our hitters, you know, the ball was like floating. It was like rising as it got to them. So we went through and found some settings that worked. And I can actually, if you remind me, I'll send that over to you so you can include it in the show notes for anyone who has a three-wheel machine. We went through and found spin rates for all the different settings on it so that we found something that was a little bit more realistic to what they'd actually see in a game. You know, I like the machine. One of the things I don't like about it is there's no pitch recognition. There's no threat of it throwing a breaking ball after throwing, you know, a couple fastballs, right? But it still has some value for just seeing what does high velocity look like and how can I solve that problem of getting to it.
All right, man. I'll tell you what, this has been fantastic. We've taken the show way past our time, and simply because great, great information. Kyle, lastly, give our audience something that we haven't talked about that you really wanted to mention, and then we'll close it off.
I just want to say thank you to, first of all, to you for having me on here. And then kind of, you know, you probably didn't even realize you did this, but years ago when I saw you talk and you just kind of inspired me to think outside the box, like your podcast says. And that really has been one of the origins of me trying to be a little bit different and trying to look at things a little bit differently. Also, I want to say thanks to all, you mentioned them earlier in the show, the youth coaches, a lot of them are volunteers. You know, they're dads who are trying to do the right thing and trying to do the best thing out there. And the message to them is just that there is so much great information out there. It doesn't have to be from me and it doesn't have to be from you, but there's so much great information out there that has made the ability to coach, even as a volunteer, if you just spend a couple of hours a week going through something and find something that works for your team and makes them better, whether it's hitting, whether it's infield, pitching, whatever, trying to find something that's going to make your team better in just a couple hours a week. And you can do it on your – there's so many great podcasts out there now. You can do it on your commute. If you work out in the morning, throw a baseball podcast in, listen to it. You're going to get so much great stuff, and you'll hopefully be able to find the things that work for you and the things that don't. So there's really no excuse to be unprepared with the amount of information we have at our fingertips. You know, subscribe to your podcast, subscribe to my podcast. Ahead of the Curve with Jonathan Gellner is an outstanding podcast that I listen to all the time. There's a ton of great podcasts out there, a ton of great information on the web. Attend local clinics if you can. It doesn't have to be a full-time thing. It can just be a couple hours a week, and I think that what you'll get better at will improve the experience of your players, because that's what we're really all in it for, is trying to improve the experience of our players and what we can give them. And you know, even if they don't go on to play baseball after high school, or even if they don't go on to play high school baseball, just how much of a good experience can you give them while they're with your team?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned the volunteers, because we've talked about them on the show a lot. We strongly believe our volunteer coaches are the foundation of our sport. And if they can just, you know, learn something, just one little thing every day to bring to their practices, bring to their kids, it's just going to help grow the game, help kids in general. So we keep supporting the volunteers. We hope that you keep emailing us. And second thing, it's funny, Kyle, how things come around. you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, you heard me speak at the convention that one time and mention about a couple things outside the box. Well, now here I am listening to your podcast because I'm trying to keep up with all the new stuff you've got. So, you know, it makes me even better, because I continue to learn after 37 years. And that's why I'm encouraging our fans and our, you know, people listening to the show, go to Kyle's website, cornerstonecoachingacademy.com. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. And listen to the podcast, because you're going to pick up stuff every day. I pick at least 2-3 things on every show, at minimum, on every show that I listen to on Kyle's show. So listen, buddy, really thank you. This has been a fantastic show. I look forward to seeing you soon. And I know the summer season's over, but I'm sure you're working on a lot more things for your podcast and who knows what else.
Yeah, I got some good episodes queued up here, ready to go over the next month or so. I'm going to relax a little bit and spend some time with the family now. So.
Fantastic. All right, that's Kyle Nelson, cornerstonecoachingacademy.com, and his podcast, the same. Check it out. I want to thank all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world for listening to this episode. And do us a favor, share the show. The more you share it, the more people hopefully can learn. And you'll help us out by doing the same thing. You can check us out, and as you know, on all the social media, Baseball Outside the Box. Forward all our social media information to all your friends in the game. Let's get everybody involved and just keep growing the game. I want to thank our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. Again, thanks to our special guest, Kyle Nelson of the Cornerstone Coaching Academy podcast. Check him out on Twitter at @coach_K_Nelson. Hey, I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. See you on the next show, my friends. Take care.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.